welcome to the podcast at The Crossing. This past weekend, we launched into our new series, In Pursuit of the King, where we'll be going through the book of Mark. Today on the podcast, our pastor, Greg Holder, and associate pastor, Ben Horseman, give us some insight into the nature of this unique account of the life of Jesus and what we can expect in the coming weeks. Enjoy. Well, we are here with our lead pastor, Greg Holder. Greg, thanks for being here with us.
I'm glad that you invited me.
Yeah, well, love having you. And then also with associate pastor, Ben Horseman. Ben.
Hey.
Welcome back.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, it's good to have you. So real quick, I think people have a sense, Greg, of what you do around here. I'd love to just catch them up a little bit.
Oh,
Ben,
please.
Tell us just about your role. And I'd love to also...
I'd like to know what Ben does. No, that's not true. I know what Ben does.
What do I do around here is the question.
No, I think you're right. That'd be great.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I work primarily with the 18 to 29 year old demographic. So I do all of our college ministry and Quarter Life, which is our young adults ministry. But then I have a hand also in theological development, and I teach some of our more academic classes and do some research. So just a lot of different things that cover a bunch of my passions. So it's a good bit of fun.
Yeah. You know this, but one of the things that helps me in it's just a great joy for me is just being able to sit around the table with, and you've been on those discussions with some of what I keep calling our young scholars, and we'll talk through some of these things and pull them apart and think about it and give each other resources and things to read or consider. And so what a gift it is to have bright young minds who happen to also be very passionate about Jesus and his church. So what a blessing.
It is. And you said it just a second ago, but even as part of the reason Ben's in this conversation is even when you start taking us through one of these big sweeping series like we're going through now with Mark, Ben's one of those guys that you'll pull into some of those conversations and say, let's talk about this.
Absolutely.
And so we thought his voice would be a great contribution to this conversation. But what I'd love to do now is back up. We're getting ready. We've actually just launched this new series. And I wanted to ask you, since we've got you, maybe we could just start really top of the funnel. I'd love to know, Greg, what leads you to pick the particular series that we're going to be going through? So what's the thought process in kind of deciding that order for us?
Well, sometimes it'll be principally decided by me, but let's go on ahead and say that a lot of voices contribute to those decisions. So it's not Greg saying, all right, this is what we're doing. Constantly listening to the rest of you guys and to what's happening pastorally throughout our church. But I would just say one of the overarching thoughts is we want a healthy, well-balanced diet.
So
I'll give you a couple of grids to think through. If we've been in the New Testament for a long time, we still very much value the Old Testament. And the Hebrew Scriptures inform so much of how we now see things happening in the New Testament. So if we haven't been in the Old Testament, we'll go back and look at that. It might be a book study like the beginning of everything where we looked at, you know, the first 11 chapters of Genesis. Okay, it might be that. It might be the prophet Jeremiah did a whole study on the book of Jeremiah. It could also be character studies. We do a lot of character studies out of the Old Testament. So I'm thinking of Moses was a huge one.
Yeah.
Daniel, Joseph. We just finished in what I think was just a significant character study of David that you led us through. And, you know, I got a chance to brag on you and behind your back. But I just want to say thank you for leading us through that, because those character studies take us deeper into our own faith. So way to go on that. But that would be a part of it. In the New Testament, if we haven't heard from Paul, then let's go look at Paul. He informs our theology so much. If it's been a while since we've heard the words of Jesus, the voice of Jesus, we can never get away from that. So you see, we're going to kind of look at it through that grid. Sometimes we'll say, hey, we've done a big topical series, like you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Let's settle in on the book of a Bible or a character study. Sometimes it'll be, wow, we did a really vertical series. Like maybe we did a series on prayer. Okay, now maybe it's more of a relational series. We God has given us so much in his word. We just want to continually feed ourselves in a well-balanced way. So this was the one gospel, frankly, that we had never fully studied as a church. So I'd always wanted to come back to Mark. And I also think it's very, very timely. We started to mention some of that last week, just how hard-hitting it is, how fast-paced it is. It really does fit in well with our mindset, unfortunately, of just moving fast.
Right.
But the power of God is just dripping off of the pages of Mark. And I don't know about you, but I need the victorious Jesus that just keeps showing up in the Gospel of Mark. So long answer, but that's how we got to Mark.
Well, so, okay, so we're looking at Mark, which is a gospel, which I even for people who maybe aren't as familiar with Scripture and how it's laid out, when we say it's one of the gospels, there are actually four gospel, what we call gospels in the New Testament. And so maybe both of you could just take a minute and help us understand how that part of the Bible is put together. So yeah. Some people are even surprised to see. So this, the story of Jesus, his life, is in the Bible four different times.
Yeah.
Why on earth would they set up the Bible that way?
I love that because in a lot of ways, I think life's so complicated, we need these different portrayals of Jesus. And really, that's what they are. They're different depictions. They're not photographs. They're not snapshots like taking a picture, but they're portraits.
Right.
They're like paintings, and they all give you the life of Jesus. But if I was going to tell someone to paint a picture of my face, one person might highlight my eyes. Someone might highlight my nose or my mouth, just for a bunch of different reasons. So in the same way, these writers take the life of Jesus and highlight certain events, orchestrate events in such a way to make different theological points in really masterful, incredibly beautiful ways.
And when you think about the most significant human life ever, you need we need these different angles yeah. and textures and mm-hmm. this mosaic for us to understand more and more of who Jesus is.
Absolutely.
And even now we're just scratching the surface.
Well, and I mean, we're kind of skipping ahead to the end of his life too, but I love that in one gospel, you have the Jesus who cries out, my God, why have you forsaken me? Like I wake up some days when I see the hurt in our world, when I see the pain that people go through, I really appreciate that Jesus can sympathize with how I'm feeling. At the same time though, you flip to John, you have the triumphant Jesus who yells out, it is finished.
Right.
Death has been defeated. Evil is no more. Right. I love that. Taking the same life, just offering those different depictions is super powerful.
Yeah, yeah. When you use the word gospel, it's interesting. It was later that people began to put the word gospel onto these stories. Mm. Mark, obviously, we're telling you this week, this past week, that he was the first gospel written. So he uses the term gospel. And then from that, you know, I mean, I'm thinking of Tom Wright says, you know, mm-hmm. that may be where then other people later on said, well, let's just call all four of these things gospels because they really are good news. They really are the proclamation of God come to earth. So none of these four thought, okay, if I do a really good job, I might be in the first four books of a New Testament. I mean, that's just not how it worked.
Right.
You know, God was leading, God was assembling all of this. But I love it. And I love that all four of them, you know, sometimes fit different personalities too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I was saying, that this is a, you know, this is the hard hitting one. You know, mm-hmm. Mark is just the, if you like car chases and jump cuts, that's Mark. You know, if you really like history and details, then go to Luke, written by a physician. If you're into the fulfillment of Jewish prophecy.
Mm-hmm. Matthew.
Matthew's it,
yep.
Right? And then when you mention John, I see John, I don't know about you, but I see John as that behind the scenes, mm-hmm. close up look, longer conversations. You're really getting now, you know, the curtain's being pulled back and you're seeing Jesus, the intimate Jesus,
yep.
oftentimes.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I just, yeah, they're making different points, but they're really all making the same point.
Yes.
That this is the God of Israel come to earth to do away with evil and really remedy what went wrong when humanity decided to rebel against God that first
That's
time.
That's it.
That's awesome. So when you look at the four Gospels and everybody kind of has their favorite, Mark is often the one that's the most overlooked.
Well, I'll even say this, Tim.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was devalued. Like, I'll give you a quote. I was telling these guys, this is a quote from Augustine that said, Mark imitated Matthew like a lackey and is regarded as his abbreviator.
Augustine said that?
Yeah, and here's the Greg translation. Mark is basically just the cheap imitation cliff notes of Matthew. And there were others who thought this about Mark because it was shorter, the stories were more abbreviated, it didn't include some of the details. And it wasn't until some of the later scholarship, really, that people began to realize, oh, no, wait, it was the other way around. Matthew is looking at Mark not Mark looking at Matthew. And so Matthew is filling out some of those stories, because Ben, you were saying earlier, Mark doesn't always just come right out and say some things. He's much more wanting you to know kind of the actions of Jesus, yep, than going into big explanations, absolutely, of things. And so Matthew then later explains a lot of these things. But Mark has enjoyed a great resurgence of study and interest by people in the last 100 years, which I love. We should appreciate him.
Yeah. And we'll get to some of the things that in particularly in the Gospel of Mark really do stand out and are unique to him, that he's saying it in a way that no one else is. Yeah. And so it's worth us paying attention to, yes, right? Mm-hmm. Well, can you guys tell us more? This weekend you started into and told us a little bit about who this character is, John Mark, who probably wrote this gospel. But maybe just refresh our memory on some of that, because we're going to be in his gospel now for several weeks. I want to make sure people have a sense of who this character is. But he was interesting. I mean, you see him popping up in the strangest of places in the New Testament story.
I got goofed on for calling him the Forrest Gump of the New Testament, but I'm sticking by that, Ben.
I don't know if
they taught you that in seminary, but I'm sticking by that.
He pops up. Whenever the action happens, it seems like Mark's not too far behind.
And which is just so fascinating. But the other part of it that is interesting is he's never the main character. If you look at even the stories that I told you, he's always just the one-off. He's there, but he's not the main character. And my guess is that made him a really good observer of what was going on and a really good listener, which more than likely really helped him when he's watching and hearing Peter tell the story of Jesus to the Roman people in the city of Rome. Mm. I think that's why we get what we get.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I'm curious what you guys think about how do you imagine Peter giving this information to Mark and him kind of writing this down? Mark, if I was writing a gospel, here's what I would say? Or do you think Mark's just listening and collecting these stories?
I mean, based on some of the details that we have, Mark is easily the hardest on the disciples, and especially Peter. So, you know, I like to think that Peter's sitting there almost humbly saying, hey, man, this is what happened, completely, but don't look at me like I did everything right. Like, you need to know that I struggled with sin, that I, yes, it took me a while to figure out what Jesus was doing, which is also really humbling for me as a Jesus follower, but also a pastor, that these giants of the faith, these disciples,
and
it took them a while
to
get it.
Peter was well known.
Yeah.
So Peter was a big deal by the time Mark is writing these things down.
Absolutely.
So he's consciously saying, this is not about me, it's about Jesus. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It takes a lot of humility for you to include a detail about yourself where the God of the universe calls you Satan, which is what Peter does.
Like, that's exactly right.
That's in the confession, right?
Yes.
Peter says, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. In his next breath, he says something where this seems to go against what God is trying to do through Jesus. And Jesus says, get behind me, Satan.
Right. It's why I said this weekend, I said, if you look at those guys, they were a work in progress.
Hmm.
I've got it, I don't got it. I got it, I don't got it. Peter's the best example of that. It's like he nailed it, and then he was at the front of the class and then had to go to the back of the class,
yep,
like within one breath. And I'm grateful for that. If you want to nerd out on like early quotes and things like that, there's a bishop, I think his name was Papias, from Hierapolis, that we've spoken about when we were teaching on Revelation.
Yeah, right.
So it's the place that has the white cliffs and all of that stuff. So he's the one who writes or is quoted as saying that while Peter is saying all of these things to the people of Rome, they're coming back to him and saying, you've got to write this stuff down. We want to go back. We need this. So, you know, you start to think about just the life of Peter and how powerfully God changed him over the years. I'm grateful for that. I really am. I'm with you. It's an inspiration that God's not finished with me yet.
Absolutely.
So you do see that throughout Mark.
Yeah, that's so encouraging. And it puts me in the story. When I look at, when I was a kid, I remember always relating to Peter. This idea that, you know, he was brash, and sometimes he would be like all in and Jesus would have to like, nope, calm down. You don't have the whole picture yet. And you know, that kind of thing. So it's encouraging to see that the disciples are struggling the same way you and I, all of us are still struggling to figure out this story today.
Yep.
What are some other peculiarities of Mark? What sets it apart from the other gospels?
Well, there's Mark's favorite word. He says, "Alethos," or we would translate it immediately.
Yeah,
we're gonna hit
that this week. I think, like in the passage that we're going to read, it's just like it just keeps happening.
So there, you see that urgency in the "immediately" word over and over again. But even the verbs that Mark uses speaks to the urgency.
I was telling Tim that so the verb, Ben, and you obviously know this, but when Mark talks about the heavens being opened, he says they're torn, skahidzo.
Yep.
And so really kind of a violent verb. We would spell it. I wrote it out at one of the services on the blackboard, S-C-H-I-Z-O. So we would say it skidzo, as in schizo. Schizophrenic or those kinds of things. So it's something that is torn. In early Jewish literature that was written in Greek, they would use that to refer to like the powerfully like cataclysmic acts of God, like when the Red Sea was torn into.
Okay.
What's interesting is, and this is what I love about these verbs when you really start to get into them, Ben, is the next time that verb is used, or I think maybe the only other time it's used.
Yep.
Is in chapter 15.
Yep, when the veil's torn in two.
The veil is torn in two. And it's just this thing of God is coming into this story, whether we're ready for him or not, God is entering into this story, by the way. And then that's the last time you hear that title of Jesus that he loves so much, the Son of God. And it's right after that. And I'll let you go read it on your own. We'll get to it. But Mark is so vivid. It's like God is going to break in and do something, and the world is fundamentally different. Yeah. And you can't help but notice it. He wants you to notice this, which leaves us, you know, with decisions we have to make, which is kind of where we were this past week, you know, this idea of discipleship, and which is, I think, is a thought that comes up often in Mark, just that theme of, you know, who is in charge, you know, and am I going to let him be in charge? Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Like, and along with discipleship, this call that what true disciples lay down their lives because they follow in the way of their teacher.
Yes.
The Son of Man did not come to serve, but to give his life as a ransom for many. So if you want to be a disciple, you live in that way. You give your life up for the betterment of the people around you.
Which you'll see is why these disciples struggle with that, because it's a word we hate, this idea of surrender. This idea is not going to be about me. It's going to be a sacrifice. So those are some of the themes that you'll see, along with, and Ben was saying this earlier, I think the victory of God. I think Jesus is the victor.
Yeah, well, it's interesting, you know, the timeliness of that, and you were kind of talking about that a minute ago. When we think of the movies of the life of Jesus that have been done in the past, or we think of the way sometimes people will talk about things that he said, like depictions of him giving the Sermon on the Mount or something like that, there's always this kind of peaceful tranquility, kind of a softness to it and whatever. And you guys are describing the opposite of that. Yeah. And I think there's a sense today of people who are longing for God to break into the story.
Yes.
Yep. In a dramatic way. Like, we want God to do something. Some of the things that we kind of maybe have put our hope in the last generation feel like it's that maybe they're breaking down a little bit. They aren't satisfying us. They aren't meeting the needs that we thought we had.
Yes.
But what we're saying about this, Jesus through the Gospel of Mark, is he is breaking into the scene.
Yep.
And he's not done telling his story. He's not done pushing this thing forward and changing the world.
I completely agree. I want to go back to what Ben said, though, and just underline that does not mean that Mark is contradicting some of the things that you see, some of the sublime truths that you see spoken.
Nope, that's
in
important.
The Sermon on the Mount, in, you know, in Matthew 5-7. He is filling in a part of the portrait that we must know. Yes, Jesus brings peace. Yes, he is yes, all of those things. But he is also the victor. He is the one who declares war on evil and is victorious. So yes, absolutely, it's both.
Yeah.
But you really do see that in the Gospel of Mark. You made me think of something, and Ben, jump in, but I think there's a lot of irony in the Gospel of Mark.
Yep.
Is that a good word?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say so.
I think there's just a lot of, and I think he's very clever about it. If you go through now and read the Gospel of Mark, the people who get Jesus, if we could use that term, the people who get him first are not the disciples. They're like some of the last to get him. And then some of the religious leaders never get him. But like there's a woman that gets him that is an outsider, a Syrophoenician woman. She gets it, if you really want to be honest. The demons very clearly proclaim who Jesus is. The disciples are having a real hard time proclaiming who he is.
I mean, then you have the centurion at the end of the story, not to skip ahead, but
you're right.
Back in that day, there was no better representation of evil in the world than Rome. So for someone high up on the Roman org chart, so to speak, to declare this man is son of God and not Caesar, that, I mean, there was profound irony there.
Yeah, so there is some irony in you're just going to see people confronted with Jesus, and they're going to have to come to terms with who he is. And I'm telling you, the disciples take a while to figure him out. They really do. Yeah. We'll see this throughout.
There's even a scene in there where Jesus heals a man who's blind. I think it's right before or right after Peter confesses Jesus to be Christ. And it takes kind of two acts of healing.
Right.
So he touches his eyes, and he can kind of see, but it's blurry.
It's fuzzy.
He does it again, he can see. A lot of people think that this is not only an amazing miracle, but it's kind of a representation of it taking the disciples a couple tries at this to really understand what's going on, to believe who Jesus is and really understand what he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's powerful. It really is powerful. And it'll be fun for us to look at this and to apply it to our lives. I will say this. We purposefully taught at a pretty good clip this past week, as I'm sure you noticed. Some of the pastors came up and said, "Wow, you covered a lot of ground."
Yeah.
There was an underlying motive to that, and you and I were talking about that,
mm-hmm,
Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Ben, I was telling him, I wanted people to get a sense of the pace of Mark, because Mark is immediately, and then, and immediately, and now let's go here.
Yeah.
And I wanted people to get a sense of that. I will say, coming attractions, we will slow down. In this overview, I wanted you to get a sense of that, because everything we're talking about, the urgency, God breaking in, the kingdom is at hand, all of those things. But now we have the luxury of time. We have the luxury of the rest of the winter and the spring to just settle in and go, all right, what are these stories telling us? And we're not going to try to cover a chapter a week or anything like that. So, and in some cases, we'll probably leapfrog over some things that we've taught before and zero in on some other things, but we'll have the luxury now of settling in and being confronted by this Jesus that is still challenging, quite frankly.
He is. He is. And that just gets me excited about all the things that we can anticipate now in the coming weeks. Some of the stories that we're going to get to talk about. You talked about applying it to our lives, and so speaking into how these stories of Jesus are now old stories that have been around for a long time, but Jesus is as ever present today as he was then. And so now we get the opportunity to see how he's moving in our lives in similar ways and doing things. And Mark will just help us with that.
Yes.
So maybe it'd be good to just, can you give us a little bit of a, you said preview of coming attractions. Can you take that one step further and tell us maybe even coming into the weekend, what maybe can we expect?
Well, so we say this every week, so you're not going to, you know, this won't, but, I think the creative teams that were putting together this week's worship service must have been breathing ether or something when they planned this thing, because it's transcendent. When I say that, I mean, I started to just listen through, you know, we have those where they give us kind of the MP3s where we know what the songs are.
Right, as we're planning the weekend. Yeah.
Well, I already started listening to that on the way into work today. And I'm going to tell you what, I bet that guy behind me on 109 thought I was crazy, because I hands on the wheel. Well, okay, one hand is on the wheel, but one hand is, I'm worshiping. I'm like, God, you are going to speak to us this week. You're speaking to me right now. So the worship is powerful. And I think it's so important, because this week we're going to continue to move forward through the first chapter. And what do we see? Last week I was telling you that, this is the beginning of the gospel of Jesus, the Christ, the Son of God. So that's who he is. We've been saying, Ben and I have been saying all along, that this is Mark is telling us that God has broken in, the kingdom of God has broken into this world in a really dramatic way. But it all hovers around Jesus. If it all hovers around Jesus and he isn't that, like he doesn't have that authority, he doesn't have that power, then really this is just another story. And right here, I mean, we're barely into this thing. Mark is going to make it very clear that Jesus has the authority. Jesus has the authority. He doesn't just speak the word of God. He speaks as God. And we're going to see this week how that power plays out in terms of healing, in terms of speaking against darkness in this world. And we're going to come back to the idea of us still praying and us still coming to this Jesus. For me, you're too young to. Did you see Field of Dreams?
I've heard the punchline. If they build it, they will come, right?
That's pretty much the whole movie, yeah. Ben. That's the only.
Bluff it, Ben. That makes me feel so old.
Ben, my 14-year-old has seen that movie. I just want you to know that.
Well, here's Dad, if you're listening, you know, we got to.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But there's that scene at the end where it's just you see all of these headlights that are kind of coming into this field that was built. And it's like the sun is going down. And it's really, it's like a just a kind of a moving, oh, wow, all of these people are coming in. They don't even know why they're coming in.
Okay. Right.
Strange way to say this. But there's a place after Jesus has had a very long day of confronting evil in the synagogue, healing Peter's mother-in-law, and then healing a whole bunch of people who start showing up at this house. It's all, my picture is the sun is going down now because Sabbath is over, so now everybody is able to travel. The word is now out in Capernaum. I want you to just picture the sun is going down and like people are showing up at Peter's house. I hear this guy can do something. I hear this guy can heal. Like the demon possessed are showing, maybe this guy can help me. It's like that scene where it's if they were driving, there would just be a pile of headlights behind. It's just this longing in the world. Does he? If he's got that kind of power, I should probably talk to him. Well, I'm telling you, we're going to end this week not by theoretically saying, "Oh yeah, you know what? I should probably talk to Jesus." We're going to talk to Jesus. And we're going to end with prayer. We're going to end with worship. And we're going to ask God to do mighty things in our world because I don't think he's finished doing mighty things in our world through Jesus. That, to me, is the coming attraction.
Yeah. Yeah. So for anybody who's listening to this right now and is in a place of feeling any kind of sense of longing of what you're describing, any sense of loss and confusion in the midst of it, or looking at the circumstances that are just surrounding their own life or bigger, things that are going on that are bothering them today in the world, in the news, whatever.
Hurt, pain, fear. I mean, let's just go down the list. And by the way, I'm pretty sure we're covering everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just us, though. If you know someone,
that's right,
who's hopeless, fearful, defeated, something's fallen apart in their life, something's about to fall apart, let's recreate that scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's just line up outside Peter's house in Capernaum and see what Jesus has for us.
That's great. Yeah. So what an invitation for people to come and experience this and experience not just what we're putting together. We're going to do everything we can to do this story justice and to draw us into worship and invite people into this. But it's not about us. It's come and experience Jesus because he's available today for the same kind of healing and drawing into the story and redemption that he was a part of way back in the Gospel of Mark.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, I'll be here.
Okay. Me too.
So thank you, Greg. Thank you, Ben. Goodness. Thank you guys so much for this conversation and for helping us get our head around
thank
this.
Thank you. Yeah.
It was fun. Yeah, we'll hopefully we can do it again soon. Okay. All right.
Thanks.
Thanks again for listening. We hope you'll join us this weekend as we continue to be confronted by the life of Jesus through our series, In Pursuit of the King. As always, we welcome your comments or questions via email at podcast@thecrossing.church.